Hello, I'm Merrick Schneider. Welcome to this podcast of articles from the Wall Street Journal, a presentation of AIRS LA. You are listening to this recording, which is provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyrighted property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Today's first article is by Jesse Newman, Fruit Loops Become Political Football. Then an article entitled, When Tech Leaders Connect Inside a Steamy 200 Degree Box by Angel Jung. Then Catherine Bindley wrote an article, Singles Seek to Find Love IRL, If Only They Could Remember How. And then Tiping Chen wrote, Perks of Dermatology Jobs Entice Rash of New Applicants. And we'll follow that up with an article, Something Better's Brewing by Chandler Navarro. All these articles are from recent editions of the Wall Street Journal. So let's begin with today's first one, Fruit Loops Become Political Football. They are a half inch across, rainbow hued and crunchy, and at the center of a political food fight. Fruit Loops maker W.K. Kellogg has been under fire for months over artificial food dyes. Now, high-profile critic Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is the country's top health official, and he's vowed to target artificial dyes and cereal that he says contribute to health problems, particularly in children. They get brighter colors in Fruit Loops, but it's literally poisoning our kids, Kennedy said on Fox News back in September. Kellogg said the dyes have been deemed safe by scientific bodies around the world. President-elect Donald Trump appointed Kennedy to serve as Health and Human Services Secretary, offering a platform to pursue his stated mission of combating chronic disease in the United States by ridding the country's food supply of harmful chemicals and ingredients. Kennedy says companies know artificial dyes are problematic, but use them anyway because they are cheaper than natural alternatives. Artificial dyes appear in nearly every aisle of U.S. grocery stores. They give foods like Fruit Loops, Skittles, and M&Ms their vibrant colors and help enliven the appearance of items from pickles to pie crust and processed meat. Many companies over the years have sought to shed additives to appease consumers' desire for simpler ingredients. But United States shoppers have sometimes revolted when food makers switch. Some companies sell dye-free versions of United States products in other countries, some of which restrict the use of certain food dyes. Kennedy's views on public health matters have been controversial. His critics in the food and health industry say many of his opinions lack a scientific basis, and some say there are more important issues to focus on than artificial dyes, such as the heavy use of sugar in processed foods. Consumer advocacy groups, however, broadly support Kennedy's mission to strip artificial colors from food, especially products marketed to children. California recently passed two laws prohibiting certain food additives, including dyes, and other states have proposed similar legislation. The United States Food and Drug Administration has approved 9 synthetic color additives in food and said they are safe when used in accordance with FDA regulations. The FDA that the totality of scientific evidence shows that most children experience no adverse effects, though some evidence suggests certain children may be sensitive to the additives. Kellogg said its products and ingredients comply with all relevant laws and regulations. The company said more than 85% of its sales come from cereals that don't contain colors from artificial sources. Kellogg Company, which split into two separate companies last year, back in 2015, said it was working to remove artificial colors and flavors from its branded cereals by the end of 2018. But the North American cereal business, called W.K. Kellogg, still sells cereal that contains the ingredients. Fruit Loops sold in the United States, for instance, are made with Red 40, Yellow 5, Yellow 6, and Blue 1. In Canada, Kellogg's original Fruit Loops are colored with juice from carrots, watermelon, and blueberries. A Kellogg spokeswoman said that the company offers alternate versions because consumer preferences differ across markets and that its dyes are permitted in Canada. Calls for W.K. Kellogg to remove artificial colors from all of its cereals have been mounting. Jason Karp, a hedge fund manager turned food entrepreneur, accused it of marketing inferior toxic cereals for Americans while safer versions are sold abroad. Back in September, Karp joined food activist Vani Hari at a Capitol Hill roundtable on American health and nutrition. They opened two boxes of Fruit Loops, one sold in the United States and one in Canada, and asked why children in the United States shouldn't get the safest version. Hari, Karp, and Callie Means, a former food lobbyist who advises Kennedy on health policy, traveled to Kellogg headquarters in Battle Creek, Michigan. Flanked by protesters carrying Ditch the Dyes and Stop Poisoning Us signs, the activists said they delivered petitions urging the company to remove artificial ingredients. Sarah Gallo, senior vice president at the Consumer Brands Association, which represents food manufacturers, said regulation should be based on science. When political ideologies are used to create fear and disregard the role of science, it undermines public trust in food safety, Gallo said. Some food giants vowed nearly a decade ago to remove dyes from the United States products, but have since abandoned or reversed those promises. General Mills rolled out an all-natural version of Trix colored with radishes, purple carrots, and turmeric in 2016, but the next year reintroduced the original after consumers complained. General Mills food scientists said at the time that the fruit and vegetable juices produced bland colors and changed the taste. Mars pledged back in 2016 to remove artificial colors from all of its food. Its scientists spent hundreds of hours testing whether radishes and red cabbages could be used in red Skittles instead of red 40. Purple carrots left Skittles spotted. Mars halted its plan in 2021, saying it found that many consumers weren't actually concerned about artificial colors. The company said it would continue efforts in Europe. Now, some food companies are again working to remove artificial dye to comply with California's new laws. Food brand consultant Jeff Krog, a former Kellogg research and director, said many companies are taking a wait-and-see approach to what the new Trump administration will do. The food industry likes clarity, he said. All the hype and bluster is a distraction. And now, when tech leaders connect inside a steamy 200-degree box, when tens of thousands of software engineers, tech enthusiasts, and salesmen descended on San Francisco for the annual Salesforce mega conference back in September, startup founder Jari Salama had an idea. What if he rented out a sauna? Salama was looking to pitch his startup Valo, which has built an artificial intelligence tool that helps users on Salesforce platform. But an anti-alcohol movement that's sweeping through the tech industry is disrupting work gatherings that revolve around drinking or eating. That's leading Saloma and others to try social saunas, where networking happens inside a steamy 200-degree box in bathing suits. The experience can take some getting used to. Bathrobes and bikinis can be distracting. It's also very sweaty. But investors and venture capitalists say it's refreshing to have someplace other than a bar to gather, and that businesses is getting done everywhere from a pop-up sauna in a Naples vineyard to an 80-person sauna in New York. Salama, a 46-year-old, grew up in Finland, where the sauna was part of everyday life. And as his first job for Nokia in Helsinki, saunas were built inside the offices. There are more saunas than cars in Finland, he said, as many saunas as toilets. Still, he worried how Americans would react to hanging out in their bathing suits for a corporate event. Scandinavians are more at ease with body images than the average American, he said. He thought about having one event for women and another for men, but the planning soon got complicated. In the end, Salama decided on a sort of social experiment, a co-ed gathering. He wound up with a wait list of 100 guests. Salama imposed some sauna etiquette, bathing suits required, and stay hydrated. And he started the event like any other investor pitch, by giving a PowerPoint presentation to an audience clad in bathrobes. Attendees shared images of the event on social media, and soon Salama was fielding calls from friends in the tech industry asking how they could do a similar event. He's eager to help, but maintains some reservation about moving too much work inside the sauna. If it's all talk about work, it kind of kills the vibe, he said. At Othership, a new sauna facility that opened in New York City's Flatiron District back in July, the sauna can fit up to 90 people, lined with ambient lighting that can switch from warm red to neon pink. The sauna looks more like a nightclub than a place of tranquility. Founder Robbie Bent, 40, said young tech founders make up a large part of his clientele. They want to be healthier, meet like-minded people, and often don't want to be out late, he said. The company hosts founder nights as well as events for investors and founders to mingle. Othership has also offered to organize complimentary team sweats as team building exercise. But according to Bent, they received pushback from human resources at companies across tech and Wall Street. Colleagues congregating in bathing suits wasn't going to fly. In response to these critiques, Bent designed a corporate swimsuit, basically a full body rash guard for people to wear in the sauna. Will Drescher, 29, built a social sauna in Boulder, Colorado, after going to one in Minneapolis this year. Neither me nor my co-founder drink, said Drescher, and we just thought, why don't we have this? They built Portal, a more DIY option than the saunas popping up in New York and San Francisco, said Drescher. We wanted to bridge what's happening in the coast with what we're seeing in the middle of the country, said Drescher. Venture investor Helene Servalon, 35, proposed a meeting with the founder of a tech company at Portal. The meeting lasted an hour, which allowed them to cycle in and out of the sauna for three sessions. After learning more about the startup, Servalon said she plans to invest in it soon. VC socialize a lot. We have only two options, have a drink or a meal. That can just get really exhausting, she said. When founders or investors ask to meet for happy hours these days, she will often counterpropose with a sauna or a hike. Not all tech workers have bought in. Layla Danielson, chief executive of an AI software company, was invited to a social sauna event back in October. She enjoyed the event and the environment it provided to have conversations, but she didn't go into the hot box. I don't know if I'd necessarily put on a bikini to go out and pitch a VC, you know what I mean? The 55-year-old said. I'll consider meeting them at the sauna after we close the deal. And now, singles seek to find love IRL if only they could remember how. Lisa Taylor, a healthcare executive from St. Louis, who has been online dating for 7 years, was sitting outside of the hotel this summer when a man came up and asked if she'd like to talk. I looked him dead in the face and said, about what? Says Taylor, 50. She thought she'd done something to bother him and he wanted to complain. It only dawned on her once she was back in her room. The man was hitting on her. It was so out of the norm that I honestly did not know, she says. And then I was thinking, I could have handled that a little bit better. There was a time when people met significant others through friends at work, or if they were lucky, by making contact across an overcrowded, otherwise terrible bar that suddenly became, in a moment, not so terrible. Then online dating took off. Old ways of meeting didn't disappear, but over time took a backseat to finding love via smartphone. These days, singles seeking long-term partners are tired of swiping and ready, excited even, about the prospect of meeting someone in real life instead. IRL is back, friends are texting one another. Yes, IRL may be back, but everybody's in-person seduction skills are rusty. And social norms around dating look nothing like they used to. Where can you even find other singles out in the wild these days? TikTokers pushing tips on how to meet matches IRL say it's as simple as smiling. Nice try, commenters chime in. There is no eye contact anymore. Everybody's on their phones. People are trying to figure out, where do we go? What do we do? Says Haley Kestavecchi, 31, who lives in San Diego and deleted all her dating apps back in February. Since then, Kestavecchi, who works in marketing, has been hoping to find dates in person. There's been buzz about activity-based ways of meeting people, but there's a catch. You have to like pickleball or running. People don't even notice, she said. If I was making contact with the intention of being approached, I don't even trust that they would know that's what I'm doing. Manish Fogat, a 37-year-old product manager from San Francisco, has been single for 10 months and looking to date. He has yet to approach a woman in person and isn't even sure where to find them. He works from home and he can't hit on someone in line for coffee because he doesn't drink coffee. I go out to get groceries, Fogat said. You don't see girls getting groceries most of the time. A few conversations have materialized at bars in recent months. Fogat asked the woman for her phone number and she gave him her Instagram handle instead. But for the most part, he finds people stick to their own groups and don't commingle like they used to. It's awkward to get rejected, he says. Why even try? A group of three women, all 28, and hanging out at a wine bar recently in San Francisco, said they were just talking about how they're sick of dating apps and want to meet guys in person, but rarely get approached. Two of the women live in Washington, D.C., and said conditions are no better there. They do have one friend who just met a guy, IRL. It was through pickleball. Around 2013, the number of heterosexual couples meeting online surpassed those meeting through friends, according to a survey by Michael Rosenfeld, a professor of sociology at Stanford University who studies how couples meet. By 2021, nearly 54% had met online. Meeting through friends had fallen to 15%, down from 34% in the 1990s. Rosenfeld said that the Me Too movement and the pandemic made it harder for people to know when it's appropriate to approach someone. They don't trust their own judgment quite as much as they might have in the past, he said. Garrett Reynolds, 38, co-founder of a compliance startup, doesn't chat women up unless he's at an event for singles because he doesn't want to be perceived as creepy. He says he hasn't been hit on anyone since becoming single back in 2022. He says that when he was at a co-living space in Costa Rica, a woman tried to get him to join a trip to a cloud forest, but he declined because of work. She might just be really friendly, he says. Katie Voigt, 32, a product designer in Portland, says because apps match people who opt in, there's at least a modicum of mutual interest. That's reduced their appetite for risk in the real world. A lot of people, in order to flirt, want the guarantee of interest. Voigt ultimately had matchbooks made up with flirty catchphrases and her phone number so she wouldn't have to tell someone face to face she was interested. The matchbook move worked on her current boyfriend, whom she met at a music festival. Erica Etten, a dating coach, says she tells clients, put away your phone, remove your earbuds, and smile. Try saying, I don't believe we've met yet, and introduce yourself. Some are obviously scared, she said. Some are horrified. Etten recently heard from a woman who ended up connecting with a guy on a train. The woman told Etten the two had been riding in the same car for a year in silence. One day, they finally started talking. The train broke down, says Etten. And now, perks of dermatology jobs entice rash of new applicants. 4-day work weeks, double the salary of some colleagues, and no emails at night. Those perks sound like they belong to a few vaunted tech jobs. Think again. Dermatologists boast some of medicine's most enviable work lives, and more aspiring doctors are vying for residency spots in the specialty. It's ungodly competitive, said Lindsay Zabrinsky, a dermatologist in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, who finished her residency back in 2018 and now splits her time between clinical work with patients and her social media feed, where the dermfluencer has 3 million followers on TikTok and Instagram. Medical residency applications for dermatology slots are up 50% over the past 5 years, according to data from the Association of American Medical Colleges, with women flooding the zone. A younger generation of physicians wants better work-life balance than their predecessors, and unlike pressure cook medical specialties such as cardiac surgery, dermatology fits the bill. It's one of the only fields where you can work 40 hours a week like a normal person, said Zabrinsky, 36 years old, who has two children and sees patients between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., 3 days a week. Dermatologists earn a median $541,000 a year, according to a recent survey of more than 150,000 United States physicians conducted by Medical Group Management Association, a trade group. Pediatricians, by contrast, earn a median $258,000 annually. Given the infrequency of skin emergencies, far fewer dermatologists are on call at night and on weekends. The more traditional schedule and flexible hours are drawing more women into the field. 71% of applicants who selected dermatology as their first choice when applying for their residency match this year were women, up from 63% 2 years ago, according to the National Resident Matching Program. The boom in skincare and its popularity on social media has added to the profession's allure. Some dermatologists have built commanding presence on Instagram and TikTok, earning as much as $30,000 for each sponsored post to promote various brands of skin products. People are much more aware about our field now, said Shireen Idris, 40, a dermatologist who owns a cosmetic practice in New York City that doesn't take insurance. That is in part thanks to the countless hours Americans spend on Zoom scrutinizing their faces, she said. All our attention turned to skincare versus makeup, Idris said. At Idris Clinic, patients pay out of pocket for $500 microneedling sessions and $4,000 laser and filler treatments to smooth skin tone and texture and reduce lines and wrinkles. It just declined to say how much she makes, but said that for dermatologists offering cosmetic treatment, the sky's the limit, depending on how efficient you are. It wasn't always this way. The work of early dermatologists was far from glamorous. They tended to treat venereal diseases, including syphilis, that manifested on the skin, said Donna Stockton, a 65-year-old dermatologist in Chicago. During her residency in New York City in the late 1980s, Stockton treated patients who experienced skin eruptions stemming from HIV. The field started attracting more would-be practitioners in 2002 when the Food and Drug Administration approved Botox for frown lines, Stockton said. Many dermatologists perform both medical and cosmetic treatments, said Dr. Mary Alice Mina, 44, an Atlanta-based dermatologist who specializes in skin cancer and offers cosmetic surgeries. Cosmetic procedures aren't necessarily an easy road to riches, she cautioned. A dermatologist might see as many as 60 medical patients a day, but cosmetic patients paying out of pocket for elective treatments demand more time and tend to expect white glove treatment. Those patients want individual attention and personalized care, Mina said. Though dermatology is often poo-pooed, think Seinfeld, where Jerry nicknames his dermatologist girlfriend Pimple Popper, MD, it's important in medicine shouldn't be dismissed, said Dr. Jane Grant Kells, 74, vice chair of dermatology at University of Connecticut Health in Farmington, Connecticut. Skin cancer is the most common cancer in the United States. Because dermatologists rely on physical exams that other physicians might bypass, Grant Kells said they often catch early signs of diseases, including other type of cancers that manifest as rashes or tumors. Grant Kells founded her hospital program nearly 50 years ago and has witnessed the field's explosion in popularity. Recently, her hospital's dermatology program received more than 600 applications for 4 residency slots. The quality of these applicants is scary, she said, adding that some take off a year after medical school to focus on dermatologic research to give themselves an edge. Diversity in the field is a continuing issue, said Dr. Rupal Kundu, 48, a dermatology professor at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. 2020 study found dermatology was the second least racially diverse specialty in medicine behind orthopedic surgery. The American Academy of Dermatology recently launched an effort to encourage more minorities to consider the field, with guidance on applying to medical school and tips about building a personal brand. Dr. Oyetiwa Esepa, 33, said she rarely encountered photos of black skin in her textbooks when she was a medical student. When Esepa finished a dermatology residency program affiliated with Harvard in 2022, she was just one of 2 black dermatology residents to graduate from the program in 15 years. Last year, she founded a skin of color clinic at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. Her appointments are booked out for months, and she has been mentoring medical students from minority backgrounds who are interested in dermatology. And now we have Something's Better Brewing. When Jennifer May was planning the 2023 opening of Ambiente in Sedona, Arizona, she wanted to make every part of the hotel's guest experience special, right down to the coffee stations in every room. May, the co-founder of the luxury hotel company Two Sister Bosses, tested many brewing systems before settling on Fellows Stag Pour Over Set, a vacuum-insulated carafe and dripper that high-end Java aficionados favor. She paired it with a matching electric kettle and beans from local roaster Fire Creek Coffee, a setup that encourages users to slow down and savor that first perfectly steeped sip, as May put it. It's about the ritual as much as the result. That discerning approach might surprise travelers inured to decades of substandard hotel coffee, from machines that sputter with scalding water to beans that are stale before you even check in. But May is among a wave of hoteliers who are dispelling those bad old Nescafe days with new in-room coffee offerings that, if all goes well, might taste as though your favorite barista conjured them up. Guests checking into the 9 luxe rooms at the new Iro Alpine Hyde in the Austrian Alps encounter manual Chemex and French press coffee makers and beans sourced from South Tyrol. General manager Henning A. Schwab wanted the ethos of slow travel to define the a Rio experience for guests surrounded by snowy peaks. The process of coffee making should be calming and peaceful, he said. The hotel eventually plans to swap out the supplied pre-ground beans for whole beans and manual grinders. Coffee upgrades can also improve a brand's eco-friendly image. To reduce waste, a perennial problem with convenience items like Keurig and espresso pods, Germany-based 25 Hours Hotel added Chemex-style glass carafes to their higher category rooms back in 2021. But the move came with a learning curve, said head of brand operations Daniel Harak. The chain had to train staff on proper cleaning and care of the equipment and print instructions for guests unfamiliar with the pour-over process. At other hotels, coffee has become a route to cultural immersion. Costa Rica's Hotel Nantipa has taken to outfitting guest rooms with a Corregidor. The traditional brewing device operates a lot like a pour-over. Guests must place a cloth filter over a cup on the Corregidor's wooden stand, then shower the beans with hot water. Owner Mario Mikowski grew up in San Jose with one at home and says it was never an option to offer anything else. While May says that photos of Ambiente's in-room pour-overs rank among the hotel's most shared posts on social media, other hotels are going the other way. When Ladero Resort in St. Lucia finished a property-wide renovation earlier this year, General Manager Christian Gandara removed the French presses from rooms and suites, a decision directly prompted by guests' feedback. They found it too labor-intensive, he said. Our guests come to relax, and they didn't want to do the work. Henry Vasquez, co-founder of travel agency Fora, can relate. I'd be super frustrated with the slow method of making coffee, says Vasquez, who travels 2 weeks of every month. I'd rather see it personalized. Let travelers request a Chemex if they want one, but make sure the experience isn't complicating their morning. That's exactly why Mark and Rose Hospitality CEO John Grossman took a different route following the $15 million renovation of Casa Loma Beach Hotel in Laguna Beach, California, this past summer. Though quality in-room coffee was a priority, after considering options from GEEP-approved roasters like Stumptown and Intelligentsia, he landed on a surprising solution. Instant coffee, although a high-end version batch-brewed and freeze-dried by the local Los Angeles company Canyon Coffee. Guests in need of a fast caffeine fix need only stir a pouch of crystals into hot water. No grinding, no waiting, no mess. To remove even more guesswork from the process, Grossman also added Fellow Stag's electric kettles, present to the ideal temperature of 195 degrees to every room. That brings us to the end of today's articles. I'm Merrick Schneider, and I'll be back soon with more articles. Thank you for listening.